of 2 7- to 10-minute speakers, followed by our main 30-minute speaker. Tonight, our first speaker is Barb C. from the West Portland Group.
Hi, I'm Barbara. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. Well, first let me thank Paul for asking me to be of service this evening. My husband and I went to dinner at his house, and so we couldn't very well say no. Someone feeds me, I have to say yes. And also I get to say yes. Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me that. To be of service is it's an honor to be here and to be of service to a place that saved my life. Let's see, my sobriety date is August 16, 1992. This is my home group, the West Portland Group. I have a sponsor. Her name is Michael E., and I do sponsor. And that being said, my topic tonight that Paul asked me to share on is sponsorship. And when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard a lot of people talk about how it doesn't say that you need to get a sponsor in the first 164 pages. So I didn't, because I was always looking for things that I didn't have to do. By nature, I found out that I'm very lazy, and I also don't like to be told what to do, and I didn't know that that was not what sponsorship was. And I also didn't realize that for me to be sponsored was giving another woman an opportunity to give away what she had so she could keep it. But then I started to read the big book, and I went to a lot of meetings, and I heard them read this little thing called Step 12. You might have heard of it. And it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And there's this little chapter called Working with Others. And so at the top of that chapter, it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. And then lastly, since this is out of the big book, I know you're listening, because it's not my opinion. It's straight from the book, and it's in the first 164 pages. In the family afterword, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And so what that says to me is that I need to work with other alcoholics. And also, you know, I sponsor women and I have a sponsor. And what's happened for me is that I actually have somebody that knows everything about me, so I can no longer go to a place where I keep secrets. And I've been told that's important. Over here, back here. Alcoholics, it's over. Look at the thing. It's so cute. Don't ignore me. I'm an alcoholic. You know, it's very important for me to have someone that I'm accountable to, someone that knows everything about me, someone that, you know, I do the steps with. And I was told, you know, I do the steps with a sponsor, and then when I've done those steps, I live in 10, 11, 12, and then I have the opportunity to sponsor. And I'll tell you something, this book did not really come alive for me, nor did my sobriety really come alive for me until I started working with others. Things came out of my mouth that I had no idea that I even had heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's interesting, but time sort of stands still when I am of service to another woman in recovery. When a sponsee calls me, I can be in a totally ugly place, and a sponsee will call, she'll be in crisis, or she'll have something wonderful to tell me. And everything that was about me, which is what my disease is, it's all about me, it's right here between my ears, it just disappears. And it's, I get out of myself. It's an absolute gift. You know, for those that don't believe in sponsorship, that's a prerogative. My experience is that, you know, it has been one of the most amazing gifts that I've had in sobriety. It's also taught me how to set boundaries. I don't know if any of you have worked with newcomers. Welcome to the people that are new, by the way. Grab onto those new babies, because they will save your life and they'll also suck you dry. So a gift that I've been given in sobriety is to learn how to say, you know, okay, get to the point. You know, let's, you know, how many meetings are you going to? What step are you working on? Are you calling other people? And I've also had gals say, well, no one's asked me to sponsor them. Like, we're going to let the newcomers decide that. If somebody's new, go up to them. Do you have a sponsor? No, I'm it. Yeah, what? That's how I've gotten half my girls. Because the reality is, you know, they don't like me. Who cares? Let's do the steps. You know, because I want to stay sober, and I also don't want someone that's new. If you're in these rooms, my experience is it is an absolute miracle, and I don't use that term loosely, that you've walked into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, a lot of alcoholics don't make it here. A lot of alcoholics don't stay here. And so, you know, we've got all these new people that stood up, and this is an opportunity for us to give it away, and it's also an opportunity for them to live and have a life that is just and is absolutely remarkable. I heard an example given, and I won't quote this exactly, but it kind of made sponsorship come alive for me. Someone talked about these two lakes that were in a very similar part of the country, and they were in similar settings and, you know, same kind of rock base and foliage, etc. Except one was just filthy and disgusting, and it stunk. And the other one was pristine and beautiful, and there was plant life and you know, fish. And the only difference was that there was no inlet to one of them. So everything that came into this one, it didn't have any fresh water coming in whatsoever. And so this lake just became rancid and deadly and toxic. And the other one had water flowing in and water flowing out, and it stayed pristine and healthy and clean and vibrant. And so for me, that's sponsorship. You know, I hold the hand of a woman above me who has the experience, strength, and hope, who can guide me. And then I hold the hand of the gal who maybe has less time than me so that I can hand that to her. And through that, you know, connection, I stay healthier, I stay accountable, and I grow spiritually. So if you're new, I hope you grab a sponsor, someone that will guide you through the steps. If you have time, I hope you grab a baby, and don't let them get out that door with a big book, and get them started on the steps so they can have a life that is truly remarkable. And I stand here today, you know, happy, joyous, and free, and I'm an alcoholic, and those two never sit together at the same time except in these rooms. Thanks.
Please welcome our second 10-minute speaker, Chris C. from the West Portland Group.
Hi, everybody. My name is Chris. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 5th, 1987. And the West Portland Group is my home group. God, I almost need suntan lotion with those lights on. Paul asked me to talk on the home group, and thanks for asking me to do this and be of service. I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. I owe my life to the principles that are contained in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, what's been passed down to me throughout other members of the group or the groups I've been involved with, and through service and through all the actions that seemingly have no relationship to my basic problem, which is alcoholism. Home group being one of those tools and one of those actions. Home group is important to me because I need a place to feel a part of. One of the manifestations of my disease is a sense of apartness. That was one of the reasons I drank. A certain amount of alcohol made me feel a part of. And a home group, once I'm active in a home group and I have that that relationship that takes place in a home group, I get a sense of apartness or of a part of. And I also need a place where I'm comfortable. You know, it's a place, I mean, if I'm not familiar with the meeting, there's a certain uncomfortability with meetings. There's a certain uncertainty that happens. You know, what's going to happen? Is this person going to hold the meeting hostage? You know, and in a home group, I know what's going to happen. I know the drill. I know what the speaker, you know, I know that there's a certain structure to that group, and that provides comfort, whereas when I don't have that, it creates a little low level of anxiety. My experience with home group started in the beginning. I had experimented with several groups of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd gone to two. This is prior to me getting sober. This is in 1986, and I had the two main types of meetings or groups that I'd gone to seemed to be, anyway. One was kind of almost seeming like a group therapy type of session where people sat in a circle and they talked about topics like balance and things like that. And I was somebody who was a daily oblivion drinker, and I'd come in and sit there and go, balance, you know, what the hell does that have to do with, you know, what I'm going through? And the other type of group that I would go to was these groups that were kind of the put the plug in the jug, you know, just don't drink. But there wasn't. Now, there could have been other material there. I may have had selective hearing. I don't know. But that seemed to be what was taking place at these groups. In January of 1987, I had reached out to somebody for help, and they had taken me to a meeting. Now, I did not want to go to this meeting. I was hoping that this person had gotten sober through other means than Alcoholics Anonymous. And I ended up going to the Clay Street group in Ashland, Oregon. And again, I didn't necessarily want to be there, but I went out of a sense of obligation, and I went. And the first thing that happened is they had greeters at the door, and they greeted me. And I went and I sat in the back, and the people, you know, a lot of the home group members recognized that I was a stranger to the group, and they came by and they said, "Hi, I'm so-and-so," and welcomed me. And they said, "We're glad you're here," and so forth. And so there was this process of welcoming that started to happen, which is, for me, in my experience and in my opinion, I guess, is a very important part of my home group. I want to belong to a home group that's inviting, that's welcoming, you know, not one where I come in and I feel like isolated and a stranger in my own home group. I feel that way enough without having to feel that way in my own fellowship. The next thing that this group did was their speaker or their chairperson. It was a custom that they shared a little bit of what it used to be like, what happened, what it was like now. They were a primary purpose group. In other words, if there was a newcomer there, their mission was to carry the message to the newcomer. And little by little, I started to identify with the speaker and then the participants. Each of the participants, when there was a newcomer in the room, they would talk a little bit of what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now. And little by little, I started identifying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. I'd been to countless meetings before, and I'd never identified. But it was through that, you know, listening to these people, what it used to be like, what happened, what's like now, I started to realize that these people drank the way I drank, they thought the way I thought, and they felt the way I felt. And yet, here they were, staying sober. And that was the seed that was planted. I didn't stay sober. I got sober about a week later. But I walked out of that group with a sense of hope. And so the primary purpose has been very important to me in my home group and, you know, the home group that I choose. One, not just for the newcomer, an example like that, but also as a sober participant in that group. You know, my solution today in Alcoholics Anonymous is, you know, I'm not very good at problem solving with a frontal assault on my problems. You know, my problem-solving skills are what got me into trouble in the first place. And it's through taking spiritual action that doesn't seem to have any relationship to the problem that I'm experiencing. That's, you know, it's kind of like I've made some decisions in this program that I made the decision that either God is everything or he is nothing. And I made a decision that I'm going to turn my will and life over to the care of God. And I made the decision that taking actions like doing inventory work and in carrying the message is the solution to my problems. And so the primary purpose for me is I need a place where I can go and do my work. I need a place where I can go and share my experience with the idea that maybe somebody else will identify with it. Because that's a solution to my underlying problem, the ism that I experience in my life today, or the basic life problems that I experience. My solution is not to come up to an AA meeting, get at the podium, or, you know, participate and take you guys hostage and sit here and say, "God, I'm having relationship problems," or which I'm not, but but if I were, you know, it's not to sit here and tell you and dwell on this and bring the problem to the table. My solution to that is to come here and try to help somebody. It's try to help the newcomer, try to help somebody, you know, behind me by sharing my experience. And that's what that primary purpose does. When I got sober, you hear old timers a lot of times say that there's not a lot of 12-step work being done anymore. And, you know, I've been here for, over 19 years. And just in my 19 years, I went on my first 12-step call when I was 16 days sober. I haven't been on a 12-step call and on a wet, real, live 12-step call in years. They're not around like the way they were when even I got sober. So most of my work is done at the group level, you know, and so I need a purposeful, well-structured group where I can come in and exercise my purpose, which is that 12th step to carry the message, which is the group's purpose. And lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about structure. I mentioned that there's, you know, some people, everybody has their different opinions on groups, and some people think that, you know, some groups are too controlling and that there's too much structure in place. However, one of the things that I look at, I'm a member of the West Portland group. I'm also a member of the John's Landing group, and not that it's necessarily a good idea to have two home groups, but I was one of the co-founders of starting the John's Landing group, and out of a sense of loyalty and obligation and so forth, I've stayed a member of that group as well. And one of the things I look at in my home group is, you know, am I hearing the solution? And also, how effective is my home group? How effective is it in carrying the message to the newcomer? And how effective is it in retaining the newcomer and in watching people come and stick? You know, I've been involved in other groups where there's a passing parade of newcomers, but there never seems to be anybody staying. And in the John's Landing group and the West Portland group, and I'm sure other groups, this is just my home groups, both groups are very effective. They're very effective at getting to the newcomer and the newcomer sticking, which that's our primary purpose. That's the type of home group that I want to be involved in. I want to be involved in a very solution-oriented group that is effective at carrying the message. You know, I don't want to be in a group where the business meetings consist of people arguing back and forth on, you know, should we buy this kind of coffee or this kind of coffee? I want to be involved in a group where the business meetings consist of, you know, are we doing our jobs in Alcoholics Anonymous? Are we delivering the message to the newcomer? And also along the lines of structure, like I said, I have a certain sense of peace and comfort in a meeting that has structure. One thing, I personally like speaker meetings because at the end of the day, at the very worst, I'm going to hear somebody do a very poor job telling what it used to be like, what happened, and what it's like now, which is the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous, versus topic discussion meetings where I could hear somebody talk about something that is maybe an outside issue or totally irrelevant to Alcoholics Anonymous in the first place. The other thing about the structure is the peace comes from knowing what's going to happen. For instance, on our Tuesday meeting, which we meet just in another room down the hall, we have a speaker and then we have participation. And the participants have 4 minutes. And if they take up the 4 minutes, we ding the bell and they're done. Now, we don't allow the participants to, sometimes you get somebody that's so self-absorbed and wrapped up in themselves that they're going to keep on talking even though the bell's been rung. We all clap with love, you know, and we drown them out. And but there's a certain comfort in just things like that that we do as in a home group that gives me peace because I've been involved in so many other meetings where that will happen. And somebody in the participation part, well, even though they say limit your share to 3 to 4 minutes, will take 15 or 20 minutes of it and take the entire group hostage. And we're sitting there, you know, I don't want to be a victim in my own fellowship. I don't want to go home having to go to my meeting. Is it a good meeting tonight or is it a bad meeting tonight? I want to be in a group where it's a good meeting that delivers an effective message every time I'm there. And I don't have to go home on the way back. You know, God, that was a bad meeting. That was a good meeting. So I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was through a very strong, well-structured group that delivered a message is how the seed was planted and how I ended up getting sober. And so, you know, I'm true to that lineage of type of group because that's what worked for me. It doesn't necessarily mean it's for everybody, but for me. And that's, you know, that's what makes a home group important to me. And, again, I'm very grateful to be sober. Thanks again for asking me, Paul.
Please join me in welcoming our main speaker this evening, Paul D. from the West Portland Group.
I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name's Paul. I'm also a member of this group, the West Portland group. And if we would have 10 speakers up here, since I was the one who asked the speakers, if they would have told me to have 10, I would have had 10 more from the West Portland group. Because I know that people that go to the West Portland group love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go to meetings every once in a while that I've gone to for years before I got sober. Were any assemblage to Alcoholics Anonymous is purely coincidental. I got to thank Barbara and Chris because they presented two of the three things I believe guys like me need in order to stay sober. A home group, and I believe a home group has got to be the best group in the world. Otherwise, you're in the wrong group. And how many different groups can be the best in the world for many different people, I don't know, but it seems to work that way. And sponsorship is so important to me that I would hate to leave my sobriety in my own hands. Because the big book says that the people that don't make it are people that cannot be honest with themselves. Cannot be honest. And I would, in order to make it, I'd have to develop a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And I went to the guy I hated the most to become my sponsor. And at that point in time, I'd been in AA for 23 years, never left it, averaged 5 sobriety dates each day. Getting sober was no problem. I did that at least 5 times each and every day my last 4 years. Drinking. My last 1 year, I went to 3 AA meetings every day. Drank between meetings. And my last year, I drank during meetings because I could no longer go. I'm one of those who believe that the minute a wet drunk can't come to an AA meeting, you got AZ or ZZ, because it's not the AA I know and love. No matter how drunk I was, no matter how radical I got, there were times they took me outside, but I always was allowed back the next day. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it so much. But more important, Alcoholics Anonymous loves me. Even in my drinking days in Alcoholics Anonymous, There's a lot of these old goats around, and you could always recognize an old goat because they have big grin. Talks about that grin in chapter 3. Gosh, I hated that grin. Especially if you were in jail in the hospital, they'd come up and that grin would get even bigger, you know. And they carried one of these ratty busts falling apart. They talk about the 12 steps, and they talk about this thing we call Alcoholics Anonymous. And one of them, the old Irishman, I'd go to him every time I went out and had a drinky poo. I'd come back, I'd say, Bill, it don't work for a real alcoholic. And old Wild Bill Scully would look at me and he would say, Paul, when it hurts enough, it's going to work. When it hurts enough, it's going to work. So a sponsor, I went to that guy I hated, and I asked him to help me. And that big grin got even bigger. And then he had to go to see he'd been waiting on me. And a couple of days later, I went to him, and I said, what about this rigorous honesty bit? And he says, Paul, guys like you and me don't know anything about honesty, so forget about it. Don't even worry about honesty. Because we don't know about it, and we never will. And I go, phew. And he said, guys like you and me know everything there is to know about dishonesty. So we're going to catch the dishonesties. Have God help you get them the way he wants them to be. And whatever's left's going to be a little bit more honest. And that's worked just fine since May of 1981. And I live with the abject fear that I would have to trust my life to my own honesty without a sponsor. My sponsor has got Lou Gehrig's disease, and there's a possibility he might go before me. I already asked a man with 35 years if that happened to sponsor me, because I don't want to go not even 10 minutes. When I came to this group a little, not quite 2 years ago, my wife had not been dead too long. And I didn't know how to live sober without my wife. My first 2 years of sobriety don't really count. I knew nothing. Did all kinds of things I didn't know I did. And I had no idea what was going on. So I really didn't know about being sober on my own. And during a 90-day period, God gave me 14 wet drunks. I needed every one of those wet ones. every one of them. I've always had at least one or two in my pocket during the last 25 years. I was told there would come a day when everything was going to fail. And when that day come, work with the sick drunk, which saved the day. And if I could have a wet one, it was even better. I've never been without at least one or two, because they told me when that day came, it's too late to go looking for a wet one. You better have one handy. And I believe that. I went to my first AA meeting in 1958. I was 18 years old, maybe 17, God only knows. I'd been on my third Skid Row. I'd been kicked out of the United States Marine Corps for alcoholism. I'd just been arrested 22 times in 21 days. One day, I missed being arrested, but 2 days I got it twice. So they sent me to adult court. I was reprimanded and sent to my first of 40 hospitals. They talk about inches and seconds in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was inches and seconds that got me in the mental health system rather than the legal system. Could have went either way. First time I ever got arrested was in Chicago. I was on suspicion of burglary. And I heard the old cop telling the young cop, "Well, he's got keys. At least we know he's not a bum." So for the next 20 years, I carried 9 keys with me. They never opened anything, but when I got arrested, you know, I didn't want the cop to think I was a bum. I was in the carnival business, and we moved towns every week or two. First thing I did in a new town was go to the bail bondsman, establish a line of credit just in case. It works. It works. Now I had to be there more than half an hour. But one of the beautiful things about being sober, you know, I got 6 phones in my house. And people call me on them. And they're not salesmen. The day before Thanksgiving, I had either 35 or 45 phone calls before I lost track. A guy like me, that nobody would let go any place. So I ended up in that hospital, and they told me I was alcoholic. And I said, "Thank God. That's the greatest news I ever got in my life." because that meant my life was not my fault. That meant I could drink as much as I wanted to. It wasn't my fault I drank because I was born that way. I could hurt anybody I wanted, and I could do anything I wanted to do, and I could blame my disease. Of course, I blamed everybody else, too. But at that first meeting, they told me to buy a textbook. And so I bought one. And the second guy got up there at halftime, at the end of halftime, and he says, take what you like. And threw the rest out the window. Them guys that tell you that, they forget to tell you you're going out the window with it, you know. And I spent 23 years going out that window, you know. And then my sponsor made me buy a new book, though I had a perfect one. My book had all the God parts crossed out, all the spiritual parts crossed out with black felt pen. There were good parts left in that book, though. Wilderness people could be quite wrong. People who hurt you seemingly without provocation. And he made me get a book with the God parts in it, you know. You think Alcoholics Anonymous is a hard program to work. Try working it without any God parts in it. So, at the end of the meeting, a woman came up to me and said, oh, you so lucky you got here in time before you go through what I went through. What are you going through, lady? Oh, my drinking got so bad that I was baking my husband a birthday cake and I burned it. Right then and there, I knew there were no real alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. So no matter what the booze did to me, I had to prove that there were no alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know why I had to prove that. But I did. And I tried everything a person could try in order to get the third thing that we need to stay sober. At least I needed it. Maybe somebody else found another way to stay sober. But the third thing was a sobriety date. And I never had a sobriety date because I always had a condition. For a long time, I thought sobriety was a sexual transmitted disease. And I always had women sponsors, you know, and then 700 and 800 pound women that are 94 to 150. They told all the young ones coming in, stay away from Paul, you know. And there come a time I couldn't get no young sponsors, see. And so then I'd have to look at the men that were beating on the counter, you know. And they kept beating on the counter. I've been sober 35 years. I ain't never found it necessary to take a fourth and fifth step. One of them guys was an original group one. And I actually drove with him to Akron, and he actually was. He died in Los Angeles drunk, but he sponsored me before he got drunk, you know. And the reason I got him was because I didn't want to know inventory. I tried everything, you know, every kind of therapy known to man, and they invented some for me, you know, because you got to remember back in the early 60s and 70s, they weren't looking for young alcoholics of my age. I could make judges cry, you know. And they were always trying to help me, you know. One doctor put me to sleep for 5 days with Stelazine. And the theory behind that was the reason I drank was because I was angry. If I couldn't be angry or mad at anybody for 5 days, when I woke up, everything would be all right, and I wouldn't have to drink no more. I woke up, and 3 hours later, I was in the bathroom drinking the shaving lotion. So that was a failure. See? And people would tell me, don't say you tried Alcoholics Anonymous. So you tried Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, if I find the right town, then I'm going to get sober. If I find the right girl, I'm going to get sober. If I get the right job, an honest job, I never had one until I got sober. See, but I always had a condition. If this and this happens, I'll get sober and everything's going to be all right. Clancy calls it these malobsessions, that you have to give up every one of them. And actually, I thought Santa Claus was spelled G-O-D. So if I found Santa Claus, I could call him God and he'd be glad to give me everything I asked him for. You know, and that never worked for me. And nothing worked for me. And back in them days, they used to say you had to go through everybody, try everything, if you were like me, before you'd pick up the book and follow the directions. And a lot of us, about 10% of us, we came in when there was no tomorrow. 1 minute later, we would have been dead. 1 minute later, we would have been dead. 5 minutes earlier, it wouldn't have worked. I don't know how the people today make it, because they got so many people trying to help the alcoholic, you know. And they did a scientific paper not too long ago, and the average adult that keeps drinking has 27 enablers. A teenager has 72. See? They don't have a chance. Too many people are helping them stay sick. And they all think they're helping them get sober, but they're not. There's only been one thing that's really made a difference to people, and that's the directions in this book. And when I came here 2 years ago, I thought my time in Alcoholics Anonymous was over. I'd run a good race, helped a lot of people. I donated a collection of stuff down to central office, and that's how I met this group. We dedicated it in May, not last May, year before, And Tom Iverson was in town that day, and our paths crossed. I ended up at this meeting. But my plan was, once that dedication meeting was over, I'd retire. I had to quit working a couple of years before, and I was just going to sit, and I was going to watch television and take life easy and let you guys have Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got picked up in this group. And I got more active in this group than I did as a newcomer. You know, and there's so many people, Chris, Barbara, Rick, and the list goes on, that I can ask them if I need help. But more important, they've noticed a difference in me in the last 2 years. I'm 25 years sober, and I'm still growing. So many people, 90 days, 9 months, the cup runneth over. So they quit, enlarging their spiritual life. I just try to scream it at them, get a bigger cup, dummy. I traded cups a million times. I got friends in here that I want to interrupt them. I miss my wife, yes. I actually wanted to drink one day. I had gone 15 years without even thinking about drinking. And one day I did. But I had been preaching to these newcomers Barbara was talking about, that one day that would happen. And that day when it happened, I wasn't surprised. And my plan was in place. I knew exactly what to do, and I did it. And then in October, I'm not going to go in with all the details, but I got to missing my wife so bad. And our anniversary was coming up in about 3 days. And I thought, oh gosh, I ought to kill myself on our wedding anniversary. I hadn't thought of killing myself in probably 15 years. I used to think of it at least 4 or 5 times each and every day. For over 20 years, there was not one day I didn't think about it. See? And I knew what to do. And it's not unusual that I wanted to drink that day. It's not unusual that I want to kill myself. The miracle is that we're all not all drunk all the time, but we're not all suicidal all the time. But you people gave me life. You didn't save my life. You gave it to me for the very first time. You did for me that what none of the state agencies could do, federal agencies, all the meetings that I have only one purpose, and that purpose is 13-stepping. Activity. I came in here with so much activity, but activity is not the same as the action in the big book. And you've taught me that. And today I love you, not because you're anything special, but because I become special when I'm with you. See? And prior to that, I was a nothing, judged only by my own standards. And what Johnny H used to say, every time you take a little drinky pool, you become an almost. And I know there's times, if I could have got just one more drink in me, I would have been a somebody. See, a somebody. But I always got arrested or passed out. One drink short of being a somebody. Them 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts make me a somebody. AA has a triangle when I got here. One corner of that triangle is unity and Chris talked about that today, the home group. One corner has recovery. Barbara talked about that when she talked about sponsorship. And the other corner has service. And I talked about that when I talked about service, which is the 12 concepts and working with others. And when I talked about a sobriety date, that's what I was talking about. Because see, AA is like walking down a railroad track. And you're on the rail. And you grab that sponsor and you put your arm around that sponsor. And then you don't keep slipping off. See? But life does cause pain, though misery is optional. And the pain of having to give up my job, the pain of losing my wife, the pain of just being me on occasion, is like the rains and the storms and 50-mile winds. And hanging on to that sponsor don't do me too much good. Them railroad ties are too slippery. But the minute I put my arm around a sponsee, then I can walk my rail. There's no way I can fall off. One arm around a sponsor. One arm around a sponsee. I found it this way for 25 years. I'm 66 this week. I never planned to be 66. I never planned being on Social Security. I never planned none of this stuff. And I got it all free because sobriety is free. I'm going to tell you one story that I've told before here in closing. See, the reason it was so hard for me is I'm like an earth person goes through this door here and there's a guy behind the door and he hits the earth person over the head with a hammer, and the earth and they drags that earth person out. I go through that same door. I get hit over the head. I get drug out. Earth person don't go back. Bright and early the next morning, I open the door. I get hit on the head with the hammer, and he drags me back out. Next morning, I set the alarm, so I'll be sure to be there early. And I open the door. I get hit on the head and dragged out. Next morning, I go, open the door, and the guy with the hammer ain't there. So I go looking for him. That's why I need a home group to go to. But more important than all that, the reason I need a home group is I'm at least the worst one. There's newcomers that have been here a week that have been doing better than me, you know. And I need you people to tell me. You can see the difference in me before I can see it in myself. And I have to hear that. I got to hear it's okay. But before it can be okay, I got to admit it will never be okay. And the way I say it's never going to be okay, and I believe that, it becomes okay. Because all the conditions are gone. God bless you, each and every one. But God already did that because you're in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And if you're feeling sorry for yourself, remember things could be worse. You could be in an Al-Anon meeting.